Hello and welcome to An Hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and what you have just been listening to is music and lyrics by Greg Tamlin, and this is such a delightful CD. It is so funny, and this guy has a wonderful way of approaching everyday life in our frantic, technologically oriented world. I want to welcome Greg Tamlin and his analog brain in a digital world. Greg, thanks for being with me today.
Thank you, Donna. It's a pleasure.
You know, when I got your CD, I have to tell you, I thought, here's this guy. There's a picture of him on a cell phone, on an old-fashioned telephone with a guitar in his hand. And I'm going, wait a minute, analog brain in a digital world? What in the world? Well, actually, I guess it's a sort of a silly question, but how did you come up with these lyrics? I mean, these are just really funny.
You know, I don't know where they come from. I write a lot of songs with a friend of mine, Richard Helm, in Nashville, where I used to live. And Richard and I, you know, we got together when we were both fledgling country songwriters and discovered we had the same weird sense of humor. We got together to just write funny songs as kind of a break from trying to write funny or country hits.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow this turned into a career for me because we have so much fun writing these songs. We just get together and talk about stuff that makes us laugh, and then we try to figure out how to make it into a song. And you know, I could talk about that all day, but we don't have much time.
Well, now, one of the things I wanted to have you tell my listening audience about is about you and your background. Now, you've just said you were in Nashville, which is the country capital of the United States, maybe even of the world. You know, that place has such a persona about it, and you have the Grand Ole Opry, you have so many famous people that came out of there. How did you know that you were, number one, going to be a musician, and number two, that you, how did you evolve into becoming a musical comedian?
Let's see if I can condense that into something for an interview. I always liked funny songs. Well, I grew up singing. I always loved singing, and I wanted to be a singer. The first time I ever heard Tony Bennett, I think, was in Elvis and a lot of those early guys. You know, I was really taken by them. And then I always loved humor and funny songs, and I never thought of myself as being a comedian. But at some point after Richard and I got together and started writing all these funny songs, it was obvious that I guess I had some sort of talent for writing and performing them. People seemed to enjoy it when I did it, and I got a kick out of it. And it was also a way to write songs about things that were important to me and Richard, and, you know, make a little dent in the consciousness of the world and of people. So it really was a quite a long evolution. It wasn't something I envisioned. In fact, when I got out of college, I had a geology degree, and I tried to be a geologist. I tried to get work in the corporate world. I tried a number of jobs, but nothing ever fit. And finally, I had to give up and just say, you know what, I gotta try music because that's what I love. And fortunately, I was able to hang in there long enough to make it happen.
You know, it's fascinating that you're sharing that because I know so many people who are listening to this show will be saying to themselves, wow, isn't he lucky? I still haven't found what I want. And yet your final comment is so significant. You said, I had to give up because none of this other stuff that I was trying was working, and I really love music.
Yeah.
And a lot of people would just say, oh, you've got to be kidding. Get practical. You can't make a living at this. It's like Marlo Thomas. When her father found out she wanted to be an actress, he said, oh, you've got to be kidding.
Yeah.
Not this business.
Right.
So
right.
It's really That's quite a powerful statement that you've made. And you said you were fortunate enough that you were able to enjoy a level of success. So tell us, what was the first musical environment that you really found for you was it?
Can you say that again? I think you cut out on me. I didn't get the whole question.
Oh, okay. What I asked you was, how did you know what aspect of music or environment of music was it? I mean, you said you liked Tony Bennett, you liked Elvis Presley. Well, one's a ballad singer, the other one is rock and roll, by my definition. How were you able to sift out the wheat from the chaff when it came to the music?
That's a long process, too. You know, you...
Okay.
You just try stuff on and see what fits and see what works and see what's comfortable. You know, it's like trying on clothes. I used to be in a rock band when I was in high school, and then I kind of started singing folk music after that, and then tried some country music after that, and eventually you just kind of find your own niche, I guess, find your own style that seems to fit, and mine is sort of this folky pop contemporary comedy niche. I don't know if it's really like anybody else, but that's a process that all artists go through, is, you know, trying to find what suits you, and sometimes it's just what suits you at the moment, because a lot of artists go through stages, you know, like Picasso, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And Picasso started out as a very structured sort of painter, and then went into what he's famous for. But I just think that's sort of an artistic evolution that probably almost every artist goes through.
I want my listeners, I agree with you. I think we all go through that. And boy, isn't it frustrating? Don't you wish you had a capsule that said, this is it for you, swallow it, you've got it, and you're in it. But it doesn't work that way, does it?
No, and that takes a lot of the adventure out of it anyway. There's so much learning, and it's all about the learning, really. It's all about the journey, because if you don't experience failure, or if you don't try things that don't work, you really never quite feel confident when you find something that does work.
Yes. Now, we're going to play a little bit over 2 minutes of track number 9, and I love the title on this. Now, by the way, this CD is a live performance. It is a live performance, totally just vibrant with the interaction with the audience. It's the Whiny Victims Love Songs. I thought this was so good. And it's track number 9. We're going to play it for a little bit over two minutes. So listen to this, because I just think it is magical.
So when I moved to Nashville about 20 years ago to become a songwriter, I had to start paying attention to lyrics. Because in Nashville, the story's always been the thing. So you learn to really pay attention to what the song is saying, every sentence. And as I started listening to music with new ears, I learned a couple of really interesting things. One is, there's a tremendous number of really great, really beautiful love songs out there in the world. Then there's all these other songs that are sort of masquerading as love songs that are really about taking hostages. There are literally thousands of these songs out there in the world infecting our consciousness. So, as a public service, I've been collecting them. And I have this list. It's called the Top 10 Whiny Victim Love Songs. And it's really, really hard to get this down to 10. But I'm going to give you my current favorites. And we're going to start with a group called the Cardigans that had a recent hit. Because for a couple of reasons. One, you might know this group since it was a recent hit. But two, I want you to try to imagine yourself actually saying this to another human being. So I cry and I plead and I beg. Oh, love me, just say you love me. Fool me, go on and fool me. Love me, love me. love me, pretend you love me, leave me, leave me, just say you need me. Now, is it just me, or is that relationship getting off to a rocky start? All right, what about country? That's kind of a gold mine. You must think I look bad with a smile.
There we are with some comments, and there's a lot more. And Greg, when I'm listening to just this little bit that we played and knowing what else is there, I just have to laugh because so many country songs are replete with this agony. You bring this out. It is wonderfully refreshing. It really, really is, but it's sort of a depressing statement about human beings, isn't it? Gee whiz. Beat me up. That's a good thing, but we'll have waffles and pancakes and bacon in the morning. I mean, it's just, it's awful.
Well, it's real easy to get programmed into that whole victim mindset, and mm-hmm. music is just one of the ways it happens. I always like to make the point that sad songs are okay. If you lose somebody, you know, it hurts, and you have to grieve because there's pain there, and sad songs that say, I lost you and I feel bad, that's okay because that's human, but the songs that really are sick are the ones that say, I will do anything. I will abuse myself if you'll take me back. Or, you know, I'm absolutely worthless without you in my life. And there's so many songs like that, that if we grow up listening to them, we get infected. You know, we get programmed mm-hmm. and we get these really twisted ideas about what relationships are for and how they're supposed to work. And we're so young and impressionable and innocent, we don't really even know better. So we grow up with some pretty bad models of relationships.
I agree. I agree. And I think that as mature adults, maybe we're able to listen to it. But that's one of the things that I find so refreshing about your musical comedy, is that you bring this out, and then what it does, it plants the seed in somebody's mind to say, I'm going to pay attention to what's being said here. Where maybe you wouldn't have even thought about it before. But it really is. It is significant, and you're right, and there's so much of this that has gone on for so many years. Now, you've got to tell me how you got involved with string theory, because I have to tell you, as a musical comedian, that's the last thing I ever would have thought you would have been associated with.
Well, you know, I do have that science degree. I do have that geology degree.
That's right,
you do. I like to say I was confused then. I wanted to be a rock star. But I'm still interested in geology and cosmology and astronomy and science, and I read about that stuff all the time. So I know about string theory, and it just seemed like a funny thing to put together with the song you're referencing, which is God, because God and spirituality and science are really starting to intersect in a lot of interesting ways now. So I don't know if that answers your question, but that's kind of where that song came from, A Brief History of God or G-String Theory. We just thought it would be fun to segue into science toward the end of that song.
Now, we're going to be playing a couple of minutes of it. It's track number 12 on this wonderful CD, Analog Brain in a Digital World. My guest is Greg Tamblyn, and he has just this wonderful sense of humor, and he's doing this live performance on this CD. Where was this performance being done?
Well, it sounds like one performance, but really it's a bunch of them, and I think I'm going to say 90% of it was done at various venues within 100 miles of where I live in Kansas City, but I think also a couple of them were done at other events, like up in New York and some other places. I'd have to look it up. But it's
we won't make you work that hard. Yeah. Let's play a couple of minutes on track number 12, The String Theory, for all of you intellectuals. We'll be back.
How many people have heard of string theory? That new theory in physics, string theory, most of you heard of that. Okay. So this is called A Brief History of God, or G-string theory. In the beginning, there was lots of competition. Goddesses and gods of every disposition, merciful, mean, laid back and hyper, little baby gods that flew around in diapers. Animals, pranksters, destroyers, creators, flute players, lute players, nymphs and satyrs. So many gods, it was hard to keep them sorted. God had multiple personality disorder. Well, keeping track of all these gods was no fun. Finally, some people said, let's cut it down to one. But the one God was angry, always finding fault. There was banishment and floods and pillars of salt. Well, why was God traumatized at an early age by standing too close to the Big Bang? Was it nature or nurture or Satan's little goblins? God had anger management problem. Well, God had other issues that mess with serenity, like this long-term question of sexual identity, the feminine divine or the male autonomous. God was so confused. Am I androgynous?
Of looking at life in the string theory. This is something, when you've performed it in different parts of the country, your audiences just really seem to enjoy this different view of perspectives. How did this all come about?
You know, it was really kind of an organic thing. When I kind of got it that people were enjoying these songs and I could intersperse a lot of funny material with some more serious material, and that was a really good formula for me to inflict myself on people. They liked it. Then it was fairly easy to book myself in various venues. It wasn't easy in that I didn't have to do any work. I still had to do quite a bit of marketing, especially in the early days. It just kind of, the doors opened, I guess is what I want to say, when I kind of got it, you know, what I was at. And people tell other people, and you start to generate a little buzz, and then word gets out, I guess.
Some of the items that you have on this CD that are part of your performances that you are playing, one is about self-employment made harder by a difficult boss. You have creativity, and it all flows together. You've even got something on the perfect woman. And all of these are items that I would imagine have been triggered by your own personal experiences. My interaction with people that have been comedians is that frequently they base a lot of what they will use as script out of something they've experienced in their own lives.
Oh, yeah.
Is that with you?
Absolutely, yeah. It all comes from, I shouldn't say all, but 90% of it comes from some sort of experience, and if it doesn't come from an experience, it comes from something I've read about or Richard's read about, and we can relate to it. I think a lot of it just comes out of living, you know, going through relationships and going through life and trying to figure out the world and the universe and make sense of everything.
Which obviously is impossible, but you keep trying.
Yeah, it's like Bernie Siegel said, you know, just look through look at the world through the eyes of a child and then comment on it. Well, I think Will Rogers said the same thing. You know, he said, I don't make this stuff up. I just talk about what's really happening, and it's pretty funny.
Mm-hmm. There are so many individuals that when they look at the world of entertainment and they look at what you're doing, they may say, wow, you just are so fortunate, so lucky. How do you manage to make a living out of doing something which seems to be so effortless for you? And how would you recommend a younger person that maybe is starting on their road in life? What would you recommend to them? You mentioned something about marketing and PR and this type of thing. How has that changed? I know I'm throwing a lot of questions at you, but what all has changed the most since you have gotten into this genre?
Well, the big thing, of course, now is the Internet, because the Internet kind of levels the playing field. It makes it possible for somebody like me to have a really nice career without a record label or without a corporate sponsor, without a big machine behind you, because the Internet, you can just have immediate contact with people that like you, and people can find you easily online. They do Google searches for your type of music or whatever. You can actually have conversations very easily with your fans online. So it's a completely different thing now. The downside of that is that, of course, there's a lot of competition. You know, you have to find your way through all of the other stuff out there, or the people who are looking for you have to find their way through all the stuff. So it requires you to wear a lot of different hats. You have to be a little bit of a marketer, and you have to be a little bit of a PR person, and you have to be a little bit of a techie. And if not, then you have to have access to people that can do that for you.
Mm-hmm.
So the bottom line is, you know, really, if you can at all spend your time doing what you love, there's so many studies out there that just show that the people that are happiest in life are doing what they love and are doing what they're gifted at. We're all born with certain gifts and talents, and the happiest people are the ones that learn how to manage their weaknesses and not try to turn them into strengths, just manage them, but figure out a way to do what you're good at, what you're gifted at, and turn that into a strength, and spend your time doing that. So I always encourage kids to, you know, not worry too much about money. Obviously, you have to make a living and figure out how to pay the bills. But if you can just figure out how to spend your time doing what you love doing, and be patient and be persistent, then things will probably fall into place.
I think that is a very wise statement. Well, I know we've got time. I want to play one other piece of yours, and that is Seaweed, James Taylor's Seaweed, and that's track number 16. We're going to be playing that, and when we come back, we'll give out your website and other things, but let's play Seaweed, James Taylor's.
So I was talking about being in Nashville. When I moved there, I had to give up what I was doing here and move there to be a songwriter. So when I got there, I needed a job. So I got a job waiting tables at a health food restaurant. I mean, it was a health food restaurant, yeah. We didn't serve meat, but we served alcohol. So you couldn't get a hamburger, but you could get hammered. And I always thought, how healthy is that? And then, of course, there's always a question of what wine to serve with tofu. Excuse me, waiter, but what vintage do you recommend with this white, slimy, fermented bean curd? Well, the tofu is very yin, so I think something very yang, like a Chateauneuf de Coca-Cola. The best part about this place was the Korean owner. This woman had come over here not really knowing much. And she was one of those charismatic, bigger-than-life characters, impossible to ignore, and that energy, that creativity of just finding a way to get things done, even though she didn't know anything about the restaurant business or even bakery. She wanted to have a whole grain bakery, so she started it there in Nashville and made it work, and it was right in the middle of Music Row, so it attracted a lot of music people. And because she made everything up as she went, she didn't have restaurant training, you would see things in there that you would not see in other restaurants. Like, for example, if she thought somebody was being too picky about their food, sending it back or something too often, she would go right out in the dining room and just talk to them, and she'd go right up to their table and she'd say, "Why are you sending your food back so often? You're not happy."
Well,
I'll tell you what. This is something, and we cut it off before we got to the story. But in this story, you have to fill this in, Greg. What was it that she said?
Well, she would go up to the people at the table in her beautiful Korean accent and say, "Why are you sending your food back so often? You're not a happy person? Maybe you should go home and think about it. Come back when you're happy."
Come back when you're happy. Well, Greg, we're just about out of time. Quickly, let's have your website so people know.
It's gregtamblyn.com. It's G-R-E-G, and then Tamblyn is T-A-M-B-L-Y-N. So gregtamblyn.com.
If you want to enjoy some music that really tickles your funny bone about everyday life on so many different levels, Greg's really got it together. I know we're out of time, Greg, but I want to give out your website again, gregtamblyn.com, gregtamblyn.com. It's been delightful having you as a guest, Greg. I wish you continued success, and let me know when you come out with your next CD.
I love your show, Donna. Thank you so much for having me on.
It's a delight, a pleasure always. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. When we come back, we're going to have another guest with us, so don't go away. We're going to be talking about Obie's wisdom. Donna Sebo here. We'll be right back.
It's time to get your glow on at the Northwest Women's Show, a show that's all about you. 400 exhibits, 4 entertainment stages, fascinating seminars, and best of all, shopping, shopping, shopping. New this year is the Glow Experience. 5 fun and easy steps to help you make the most of your time at the show. Meet Terry Haas from HGTV's Design to Sell. Polly Klein, famous animal communicator. Dance diva Chris Linares, who will help you unleash all the power you need to dance your own dance. Plus fun and trendy fashion shows from JCPenney, favorite authors Anne and Leslie Rule. And they're back! Seattle's hottest firefighters. Bring your mom, your daughter, your sister, your friends. The Northwest Women's Show, sponsored by Drugstore.com, American Family Insurance, PECU, Como TV, Beauty.com, and Green Smoke. It's electric. Get your glow on at Questfield Event Center March 4th through 6th. The Northwest Women's Show, it's such a girl thing. For show information, go to nwwomenshow.com.
Enter the magical world of God's Kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown-red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
Hello and welcome back. This is Donna Sebo. As I've been telling you, we have a special guest today, Dr. Cochran, and his book is called Obie's wisdom. And I want to thank you, Dr. Cochran, for being with us today. And Obi's wisdom, when I got it, I thought, you've got this cute little caveman laying in a batch of four-leaf clovers, it looks like, underneath the tree, and it's a caveman's simple guide to health and well-being. This is a character that is really quite a nice guy. You're a doctor?
Yes.
What made you decide that Obi had to have a place in the published world?
Well, the genesis of the whole book was not just the fact that I'm a doctor, but my own health background. I spent many years suffering from chronic arthritis pain, you know, long before I ever became a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my biggest frustrations that, you know, a lot of other people share is the healthcare system is so complex. There were so many things that I didn't understand. And when I say the healthcare system, I'm not just talking about conventional medicine. I'm talking about the alternative healthcare field as well. There are so many different options. There are so many different competing theories. There were times when I just did not know where to turn. And my, you know, my health challenges are very significant. I suffered from years with chronic debilitating arthritis pain to the point where it even ended my first career. And I finally was able to emerge from that about 4 years ago, 5 years ago. And what enabled me to do that was when I came to the understanding that underlying anything that we experience in life, health is always there. Even if we have a debilitating disease, even a terminal disease, deep down inside of us, we have perfect health. And that's not something that a lot of people who are sick believe easily, and it's not something that I believed easily, but it is something that finally I came to understand. And when you come up with that simple understanding that we are all designed to be healthy, and the most important things that we need to be healthy are things that have already been given to us at birth, things that are already provided in the world around us in nature. And so I knew I wanted to write a book that simplified the pursuit of health for people, and what better than a caveman as a metaphor to illustrate that point.
Now, you mentioned something before we start talking about Obi. You talk at the beginning of your book about Oklahaven Children's Chiropractic Center. Please give us some information on that.
Right. One of the things, that's the very beginning of the book. When I wrote the book, I wanted it to be a book not only to help people that read the book, but something that mattered in a very far-reaching way. And I'm donating 10% of the profits to the book to two charities that are very important to me. One of those is Oklahaven Children's Chiropractic Center. Now, you know, we've mentioned that I'm a doctor, and my particular healing art is that I'm a doctor of chiropractic.
Mm-hmm.
And early in my very first term in chiropractic college, I learned about this place. Actually, I'd heard about it before that, but I actually got to meet the doctor who runs Oklahaven. And what it is a nonprofit center in Oklahoma City, and it serves children from all around the world. She travels around the world. Children have come from around the world to see her to this center. And it provides chiropractic care to children who are very severely ill, children that everyone else has given up on, whether it's conventional medicine, whether it's other alternative healing modalities. You know, oftentimes families are literally hundreds of thousands of dollars in medical debt because of the child's medical condition. Yet when they receive this powerful chiropractic care that's offered at Oklahaven, their lives turn around and their families' lives turn around because of the benefits they have. It's a place that I've actually visited myself, and I've actually worked with some of the children there myself. And it's just, I think Oklahaven is one of the most vivid illustrations I've ever seen about how the power that made the body is the most important power for healing the body. When you get down to that basic simplicity and start working with that powerful life force we have, that's when health is really allowed to emerge, even in the most challenging situations.
You have a quote in your book, "There is no matter as such. All matter originates and exists only by virtue of a force which brings the particles of an atom to vibration and holds this most minute solar system of the atom together. We must assume behind this force the existence of a conscious and intelligent mind. This mind is the matrix of all matter. Now, that's a quote that you took from Max Planck, the father of quantum physics, and this was one thing that he stated in his Nobel Prize acceptance speech. Obi, as the character in your book, is a pretty down-to-earth guy. He is someone that really lives in the moment, doesn't he?
Yes, definitely.
So when you are writing about Obi, you come through with this wonderful, I think, very optimistic attitude about how we think and what we do really affects our health. And you had a delightful story in here about the sequoia seed by Karen Wright.
Yes.
And let's just talk about Obi's wisdom relative to that beautiful story by Karen.
Okay, well, the sequoia seed is actually a book written by my friend Karen Wright. And, you know, early in the book, she describes how the largest form of life on our planet, the sequoia tree, actually comes from a seed the size of a flake of oatmeal. And so when we're talking about, you know, the quote that you gave about Max Planck, he's talking about there's the existence of a conscious and intelligent mind. And that conscious, intelligent mind, what in chiropractic we call universal intelligence, and within our bodies we call innate intelligence, that's where health comes from. You know, we all have an innate intelligence inside of us that allows us to be healthy and vibrant. Even when we're sick, that innate intelligence is striving to make us well and keep us well. And the main theme throughout the entire book is that we want to work with that innate intelligence, that conscious and intelligent mind. That's where health comes from, the innate intelligence that we all have inside of us. Another way of putting it, you know, I've got a section in the first chapter that talks about how we are all inherently healthy. Another way to put it, thinking in automotive terms, is health is standard equipment for every human being. When we are born, we have health inside of us. No matter what challenges we might have when we're born, no matter what health challenges we might have later on in life, health is standard equipment. It's not an aftermarket product because of the innate intelligence that we all have inside of us.
You quote Voltaire, who is one of my favorite philosophers, "The art of medicine consists of amusing the patient while nature cures the disease." I had to chuckle when I read that because most physicians that I am aware of that have integrity will say, "I am a technician. I honestly don't know how you get well. I'm not this that creates the health and the wellness."
Right.
And this is something that I think is really a tough thing for many people to really wrap their minds around. We can use herbs. We can do lots of things for ourselves. But our body does have this innate intelligence. I was talking with someone just yesterday who has been going through some health challenges, and they are going to have to go in for surgery. This person, for whatever reasons, due to their body chemistry, they cannot take most anesthetics that would be offered in surgery to put this person under. It actually creates a very negative environment for them. And finally, it was found out something that could be used in the form of anesthesia that would not be negative. The human body is amazing. What works for one person doesn't work for another. And having that awareness that you're going to pay attention to what your body tells you, what it does, is really significant. Now, you had severe arthritis. Tell us what you did that enabled you to be able to balance and harmonize your body so that you weren't crippled with this.
Well, that was a long journey, and, you know, and the reason for that is because we have forgotten that our bodies have the inherent ability to be healthy. I mean, in our society, in Western society, we're trained from day one that you know, we need doctors in order to be healthy. I mean, most people have children that, you know, in hospitals with doctors there delivering the baby. And we've forgotten that the, you know, a mother is inherently able to have a baby safely. I mean, that's not to say that doctors don't have a place. And in fact, my preference is, you know, midwives are a lot better than medical doctors in that regard. But and then as we grow up, you know, anytime we're sick, we go to the doctor or we go to some natural health care practitioner, and then we're taught that we have to take something from the outside, whether it's a prescription medication, an over-the-counter medication, or an herbal or vitamin supplement, something like that. We are totally, you know, completely throughout our entire lives told that that we need something from the outside to be healthy, and that's reinforced over and over and over and over again. So we've lost sight of the fact that we all, you know, have health as standard equipment. And I kind of lost track of what your question was. I'm sorry.
How did you change your physical condition?
Yeah, and that was multifaceted. It was a long journey. I had to get back in touch with the fact, you know, that I am inherently healthy. And then, you know, I had to learn about, you know, eating natural foods. I had to learn about exercise. Even when I started doing those things, you know, my symptoms didn't go away right away. But the most important thing was the change in my mindset, the change in my frame of reference that took me back to the most important basic truth, and that's that we are all beautiful and perfect and inherently healthy, and that we have the ability to heal no matter what we have. And once I made that shift in thinking, once I actually embodied that, that's when things begin to change. Now, I didn't feel the changes symptom-wise right away because it takes a while for anything like that to make a change. But when I did come to that understanding, when I realized that I was inherently healthy, that I was a beautiful and perfect being, that change in mindset changed my internal level of vibration, which I think you and most of your listeners will understand. And that elevated level of vibration over time allowed health to eventually reemerge. And it wasn't a matter that I told myself that, okay, I'm going to be healthy, because honestly, I didn't think that I would ever be rid of the disease. I just realized that even if I had these problems, that I still had an awful lot of potential in life, and I was going to focus on living the best life that I could possibly live, regardless of whether I had a disease or not, rather than just focus on, oh, woe is me, I have this disease, I've got to fight the disease. And once I focused on living the best life I could, like I said, over time, that allowed the disease to recede into the past for me and allowed me to become a very, you know, physically strong, robust person, to the point where I even became a triathlete, ran a marathon, ran a half Ironman triathlon. And although I'm not, I'm not endurance training these days. Actually, I'm starting that again. I am still running. I am focused on running a 10-kilometer trail run this coming April and a half marathon in September. And I'm not having any of the physical challenges that I had. But the most important thing I did to keep that in balance, as you put it, was establish that mindset that I am, at my core, a beautiful, perfect, healthy being. Now, having that mindset isn't a guarantee. It's not like a drug that's, you know, going to guarantee that somebody's going to move past the disease. But I think it is an absolutely essential element of doing that. And there's a lot to that. I mean, I understood intellectually, I understood these concepts for years before I embodied them, before they finally took inside of me. And that's why I wrote the book, you know, because I had a years-long up-and-down, twisty, turny, tortuous journey to come to this point, and I wanted to simplify it for everybody so that they didn't have to travel the long journey that I traveled.
There are so many different modalities when it comes to wellness, and you bring out some interesting facts regarding how many people die of disease in the United States or die of medical treatment, procedures, etc., in the United States, and the numbers are quite phenomenal. And I think people are beginning to recognize, little by little, that if they want to be well, they need to take on the responsibility of acknowledging that this is the chassis that they're occupying, and they want to take care of that chassis better than they take care of their automobile. And that is something that takes a shift in a mindset, because like you said earlier, we've become so indoctrinated that when someone gets a common cold, for example, the first thing is we've got to have an antibiotic. Well, that doesn't work well with the body. That doesn't serve you well. We have a member of our family right now that because of antibiotics, they now have something that could easily become like a superbug in their system because the body's immune system is compromised, and consequently, there is this shift in the body metabolism and the body chemistry. So there's a lot we're becoming aware of, and OB's Simple Guide to Health and Well-Being, I think is a very down-to-earth, basic, common-sense kind of a publication you put together. I really like a lot of your quotes. One is by Mahatma Gandhi, and it is, "I need no inspiration other than nature. She's never failed me yet. She mystifies me, bewilders me, sends me into ecstasies. Beside God's handiwork, does not man's fade into insignificance?" So I look at this, and you've got so many wonderful people that you've written about in here and how they have changed their minds and realized that they really had to take really a different approach about their own wellness. And I just loved the story that you had in here about, you said a friend of yours told you a funny story about an important lesson regarding mindfulness. Would you want to share that? That's about an old farmer.
Oh, yeah. I learned that from a friend of mine in a Toastmasters club, and it's a parable. It's not a real story, but there's this young man grew up and left the farm, and he moved to the city, and he came back to visit his father one time back on the farm, and the young man was a grew-up city slicker, and he knew everything about all of the new technology and everything, and he told his father, "You know what? You should get a telephone." And his father says, "Nah, I don't need a phone. I don't need one of those newfangled things." And the son says, "No, you know, you really should get a phone. They're so convenient." And so the father decided that, okay, if they're convenient, I'll get a phone. So one day the son was back home at the farm, and he and his father had just finished eating dinner, and they're sitting out on the porch watching the sun go down, and the phone starts ringing. And the father didn't get up to answer it, and it kept ringing, and the son said, "Father, aren't you going to answer the phone?" And the father said, "Nope." And so finally it finished ringing, and the son said, "Dad, why didn't you answer the phone?" And the father said, "Wasn't convenient." In other words, you know, he got the phone. The son convinced him to get it because it's a modern convenience, but, you know, he and his son were sitting on the porch enjoying a wonderful moment together, and the phone rang at an inconvenient time, and so that modern convenience, so to speak, is something that would have interrupted that if the father had allowed it to do that.
A little bit of wisdom there. Fun, Fitness, and Life. That is the title of one of your chapters, and I think that is absolutely very, very true. And you have in here, play forever, work whenever. That's a friend of yours by the name of Chic.
Yeah, Chick.
Or Chick, excuse me.
Yeah,
it's spelled Chick. Like Chic, C-H-I-C.
Yeah.
I'm female. That's how I read it.
Yeah. Yeah, he goes by Chick. And I like to teach that to people as the most important fitness lesson that I've ever learned. Not that specific quote, but another quote of Chick's. And that quote is play first. And, you know, and don't get me wrong, Chick is not a guy that just goes out and plays all the time. He's not a lazy guy. He's a very industrious, hardworking person, but he definitely makes sure that he goes out and plays. And playing for him is doing things in the great outdoors, whether it's mountain biking or hiking or kayaking or skiing or whatever. And he loves the great outdoors. And he's in his probably mid-60s now, I guess, and he's very physically fit, one of the fittest, healthiest people I know. In fact, he's probably out on a mountain somewhere skiing as we speak. But and in fact, he and I were conversing just a few weeks ago, and I was telling him, he was asking me how the book sales were going, and I was telling him all of the things that I'm doing to build a marketing program for the book and the different radio interviews that I'm doing, and I'm having fun doing that. And he says, "Are you getting enough play time in?" And I said, "Oh, you know, I kind of need to do a little bit more of that." And so I have been doing more of that lately. But, you know, that's the most important lesson in the chapter on physical fitness. I mean, there are lots of different things that you read about physical fitness, about how, you know, you need to figure out what your heart rate is, and, you know, you've got to exercise 3 times a week for 1 hour a week at a target heart rate, you know, blah, 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 blah. And those things are great for people that want to follow them. But the most important lesson in the chapter is you've got to do something that's fun. You've got to be physically active doing something that's fun. You don't have to go to a gym to be physically fit. Now, if it's fun for you to go to a gym, then by all means, that's what you should be doing. But if you would rather be out bicycling or gardening or shooting hoops or doing yoga or dancing or, you know, whatever is fun for you, that's what you should be doing. Because if you are forcing yourself to embark upon some sort of an exercise program that you don't enjoy, the first thing that's going to happen is it's going to stress you out, because you're forcing yourself to do something that you don't enjoy, and who needs a new stress in their lives? And then the second thing that's going to happen is you're going to stop doing it because you don't enjoy it. Then you're going to be feeling guilty about not doing what you said that you, what you think that you should be doing. And again, that's another stress. Who needs that stress in their lives?
Dr. Cochran, we are running out of time.
Okay.
I am sorry, but this is so interesting. I do want to let my listeners know about your website, though. And
okay.
The website is obyswisdom.com, and that's spelled obyswisdom.com. I'm sorry, we are out of time. It's been a delight having you as a guest. Obie's Wisdom, A Caveman's Simple Guide to Health and Well-Being, is a delightful book, good practical down-to-earth information related in a way that is just really a pleasure to read. Dr. Cochran, thank you so much for being with me today. This is Donna Siebel. Don't forget, tomorrow I'm going to be at the Pacific Northwest Women's Show, so we'll be having the best of Donna tomorrow. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Siebel. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.